You're listening to the Touch 'Em Up podcast. And on today's episode, we have UFC on ESPN 36, Błachowicz versus Rakic, preview, predictions, and analysis. This fight takes place this Saturday, May 14th, from the UFC Apex in Las Vegas, Nevada. And in the main event of the evening, you have a battle between top-ranked UFC light heavyweights and the former light heavyweight champion and number one-ranked fighter possessing the Polish power in Jan Błachowicz going up against the number two ranked UFC light heavyweight contender in Aleksander Rakic. So without any further ado, let's get this started and step into the ring. All right, so right off the bat, I said Rakic is ranked number two. He is actually ranked number three in the UFC's light heavyweight division. So you know, I'm surprised he's not ranked number two. But again, you know, it is what it is. I think Jiří might be ranked number two. Yeah, that makes sense. Jiří would be number two, Błachowicz number one, and Rakic number three. So I guess that makes sense. I was kind of taking Prochazka out of the equation. But a great main event in the UFC's light heavyweight division between one of the most technical fighters in the UFC's light heavyweight division. And in my opinion, now that John Jones is potentially moving up to heavyweight to fight Stipe Miocic, the most technical light heavyweight on the UFC roster in Aleksander Rakic, going up against the former champion who was on a huge career resurgence, giving Israel Adesanya, the UFC middleweight champion, his only professional defeat in mixed martial arts when he moved up to light heavyweight at UFC 259 to try to take the light heavyweight championship from him, from Błachowicz, but was unsuccessful. Also has that knockout victory over Dominic Reyes, a knockout victory over Luke Rockhold, who's going to be making his return against Paulo Costa very soon. We'll talk about that on a future podcast episode when we break down the recent fight announcements. Błachowicz obviously losing his title at UFC 267 to Glover Teixeira via submission in a fight where he just looked like he wasn't there. He said himself that he just wasn't there mentally or physically. Looks like he had a neck injury or some type of injury that he went into the fight with, and just didn't look like the Jan Błachowicz that we've come to know and love. But it's a very tough test for both men, a very tough test for Błachowicz and Rakic. And I can't wait to break it down when we get to the main event. But before that, we got to talk about all the other fights on the card. Or I guess I should say not all the other fights, but all the fights we're going to break down on this podcast. And we're going to start off on the prelims in the middleweight division with undefeated Diaz brothers protege in Nick Maximov, who comes into this fight with a record of 8 victories and no defeats, going up against Andrei Petroski, who comes into this fight with a record of 7 victories and 1 defeat. This is a really good matchup for the middleweight division, and Nick Maximov has had 3 fights in the UFC, if you're counting the one fight on the Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and we'll pull that up really quickly. 8-0 in his professional mixed martial arts career. When it comes to UFC fights, we had one on the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series and a unanimous decision victory over Oscar Cota, a decision victory over Cody Brundage at UFC 266, Volkanovski versus Ortega, and then his most impressive victory thus far in a split decision victory over Punahele Puna Soriano at UFC Fight Night 200, Hermanson versus Strickland back in February of this year. The win over Punahele was extremely impressive, and I think a lot of people went into that fight believing that Punahele was just going to walk right through him, going to catch him with the straight left hand, was going to catch him with the right hook, was going to just put him on ice and knock him out. Now, Maximov trains under Nate Diaz. He trains under the Diaz Brothers Academy, I believe trains under Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and everything out in California. Talks like the Diaz Brothers, has a personality like the Diaz Brothers, and you know, he doesn't fight like the Diaz brothers because he has more of a grappling heavy approach than the Diaz brothers, but you could see a little bit of the similarity in Maximov and either of the Diaz brothers. When you listen to them talk, you look at the way their mannerisms are, and honestly, the fight style on the feet is a bit similar with the high guard kind of walking forward, trying to land the shots on the feet. I think this fight is going to come down to cardio. Both men are great in the grappling. Both men are good in the transitions. Both men are good in the submission aspect. But in this case, I think it's more of position over submission. Who is better at getting to the dominant grappling positions to set up their submission attacks, either set up submissions, launch their ground and pound attack at you with heavy shots, or pepper you up to work for submissions? I think one thing you'll notice in Andre Petroski is that his cardio tends to fail him when you go into the midpoint of the second round and into the third round. Now, you could say that, but you also look at his last fight. We'll pull it up very quickly. His last fight at UFC 267 over Yao Zhong Hu, he got a submission victory via arm triangle in the third round at 4 minutes and 46 seconds. So on the feet, he tends to get tired. He tends to get gassed. He was winging that left hand, winging the right hook. He has a good 2-5-2, a straight left, a lead right uppercut, and a straight left behind it. Good lead right uppercut followed by a straight left. Good right hook. Good overhand left. Very good overhands. But he wings a lot of his punches on the feet. His bread and butter, though, is the jiu-jitsu. It is the submission attacks. It is looking to set up a finish and out-grapple you. He's good in the transitions. He's good in the scrambles. But he likes to attack with submissions. He went for that arm and guillotine from the back where you have the referee position or backside control. You reach around with the head and arm control to the opposite side where you're sitting on the back, and then you throw the shin across the belly and the opposite foot goes over to the opposite hip, and then you can lock up a guillotine. You can use that to, you know, roll your opponent onto their back and then work for the mounted guillotine. He can go for anaconda chokes from that position, darce chokes from that position, and he attacked all of those. More anaconda than darce against Yao Zhong Hu, but he's relentless with the submission attacks. He's always looking for a finish. With Nick Maximov, he's got a little bit of a more lackadaisical, relaxed approach when it comes to trying to set up finishes, but his grappling, his takedown attempts, his shooting of takedowns, his scrambling ability is very, very, very good. And with him, it's more position over submission. So will it be the positions and the out-positioning of Nick Maximov that takes over Andre Petroski, or will the constant submission attacks and the heavy shots on the feet be enough to work and grind Maximov out or potentially get a late submission finish for Petroski? I think a lot of this fight comes down to the cardio. Now, you can't compare Maximov to a Diaz brother. He is undefeated in mixed martial arts. He's got a record of 8 victories and no defeats. And if you look at his overall career, 5 out of those 8 victories come by way of finish. He's got a TKO, a submission due to Kimura, another TKO in the first round. So let's start it over. First round TKO in his first pro fight. Second round submission victory. First round TKO. First round submission victory via rear naked choke. Second round submission victory via rear naked choke. And then in the UFC, he's come back with 3 decisions, including the one on the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series. 2 unanimous and 1 split decision. So in the UFC, he's fought to a decision, but every fight in his first 5 professional fights has been a finish. Now, if you go back and look at Andre Petroski, we'll pull his record up. And with his fights, it has been a TKO, a submission via Kimura, a TKO, a TKO, a TKO, a TKO, and a submission. Every single one of Petroski's wins have come by way of finish. 3 in the first round, 3 in the second round, and 2 in the third round. Well, 1 was a finish because he lost. So the 1 loss was in the second round via TKO. But his wins, I guess I should rephrase that now because I kind of contradicted myself. He's got 3 wins in the first round via finish, and then 2 wins in the second round via finish, and then 1 win in the third round via an arm triangle choke submission, which was his fight, his second fight in the UFC against Yao Zhong Hu that we already mentioned at UFC 267, Blahovic versus Teixeira. The Michael Gilmore fight was at UFC on ESPN 30, Barbosa versus Chikadze, and he got a TKO via ground and pound in the third round. So he can push a pace, he can move forward. But I think the constant takedown attempts, the scrambling ability, the ability of Nick Maximov to push the pace, get in the face of the opponent, and honestly, in my opinion, have the better stand-up. I think that it's going to be orthodox versus southpaw. Maximov's going to be looking to get that left foot on the outside of the lead right foot of Petroski. Petroski's going to be obviously looking to get the lead right foot on the outside of the lead left foot of Nick Maximov. A lot of right kicks to the body and teep kicks, I believe, are going to be coming from Nick Maximov here. A lot of left hooks into straight right hands. Petroski is going to be looking to come over the jab with the lead right hook, followed by a straight left. He's going to look to step to the outside of the lead left foot and come over the top with that beautiful overhand left. But a lot of the strikes on the feet from Petroski, he's a big guy. He's got a bodybuilder style of frame. He's a big man for this division. And I think that he is going to wing his punches. He's going to have more power, but he's going to overthrow a lot. And I think that training with the Diaz brothers, watching the Punahele Soriano fight, he can keep up a pace for 15 minutes. Now, Petroski can do so as well, but I don't think he can keep up a pace on the feet against Nick Maximov. I think when you get into the midpoint of the second round and past that, when you get into the third round, you know, I don't think that Petroski can keep up that pace. And we've seen him get tired in his last fight at UFC 267 that we already talked about. He gets tired in the second and the third round. He wings his punches. He overthrows. Sometimes he gets caught on the feet. He still has power even though he gets tired. He still can grapple even though he gets tired. But I don't think he's going to be able to lay and pray against a guy like Maximov on the ground. And I think Maximov, if he senses that Petroski is getting tired, he can push the pace on the feet, land the volume combinations, land the right kick to the body, land the right high kick, land the 1-2s, push the pace, work the takedowns. I think we're going to see Nick Maximov kind of drown Andre Petroski towards the midpoint of that second round and into the third round. And I'm actually going to go with a late third round submission victory here for Nick Maximov over Andre Petroski. I think he's going to get the victory via a third round. I'm going to go with, do I go with a rear naked choke? I feel like I always pick rear naked choke when it comes to submissions. So we're going to switch it up here. I'll go with a third round guillotine choke submission for Nick Maximov over Andre Petroski to improve to 9 victories and no defeats in his professional mixed martial arts career. I think the Diaz brother protege, you know, does the Diaz brothers proud and comes up with a big third round finish over Petroski. Now, if you look at the odds for this fight, I believe they are listed on the UFC website. I can actually pull them up right now. So give me one second. We will pull up the odds. Just give me one second while it loads. We'll go to MMA and we'll go to Nick Maximov. So Maximov sits at a minus 380 favorite on the money line. Petroski comes back at a plus 300. I think this line is way too heavy. I don't know why Maximov is such a heavy favorite. I could see him sitting at a minus 210, minus 225, but sitting at a minus 380, I think that's crazy for him considering he hasn't had that many fights in the UFC and both of these guys are still newcomers. I know he's undefeated, but that money line is pretty ridiculous if you ask me. Now, if you wanted to bet via the way of the win, I think if you're throwing Maximov in a parlay, it would make sense. But betting him straight up on the money line, I just don't see a whole lot of value there. I think Nick Maximov by submission, if you're betting singular on Maximov to win, I would bank on the submission. Nick Maximov by submission sits at a plus 350. So I think if you're going to bet in a parlay, you can throw Maximov in straight up on the money line. If you're betting singularly, you know, just a single bet, then I would say probably Maximov by submission at a plus 350. Is a decent bet to run if you're going to bet on this fight, because I see Maximov's pace, grappling pressure, the takedown pressure, the scrambling ability, the ability to maintain top control and look for position over submission before he can set up his submission is going to take him very far in this fight against Petroski. So I like the submission prop. But if you're betting on a parlay, probably running him straight up without the finish or anything would be the best bet. But yes, Nick Maximov to defeat Andre Petroski via a third round guillotine choke submission. All right, up next on the prelims, we've got a battle in the lightweight division between lightweight and UFC veteran and Michael the Menace Johnson, who comes into this fight with a record of 20 victories and 17 defeats. Yes, you heard that right. Going up against Alan Nugent Patrick. He comes into this fight with a record of 15 victories, 3 defeats, and 1 no contest. All right, so I feel like this is do or die for Michael Johnson. You know, Michael Johnson has one of the most unassuming records in the UFC. You look at his record and he's almost 50-50. He's almost at 20 victories and 20 losses. I mean, he's got 3 more wins than he does losses, 20 victories out of 37 fights. And a lot of people would be like, oh my God, this guy's terrible. He's awful. He's a bum. You know, the way anything a casual would say. But within those 20 wins, this man has a knockout victory over Dustin Poirier, a decision victory over Tony Ferguson. He rocked Khabib on the feet at UFC 205. He almost defeated Josh Emmett via decision at 145, when he was on his way to cruising to a decision victory before he got hit with that overhand right. And he also has a decision victory over Edson Jr. Barbosa. So a knockout over Poirier, a decision over Edson Barbosa, a decision over Tony Ferguson, rocking Khabib on the feet, almost beating Josh Emmett, who's a top contender at 145 pounds. This man has done a lot in his MMA career, and he's got some of the quickest hands in the UFC. I think his hand speed is absolutely ridiculous. Now, I do think that throughout his career, he has slowed down. And, you know, judging off of his recent performances in the UFC, I think you kind of have to take this fight with a grain of salt, because Alon Patrick, record-wise, is so much better than Michael Johnson. Alon Patrick comes back with a record of 15 victories and 3 defeats. Michael Johnson's coming in with a 20 victories and 17 defeats. On SureDog, it says 19 and 17, but I believe it's 20 and 17. Correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm off by one, then, you know, that's just how it is. But you look at Michael Johnson's last few fights, and he's coming off of 4 straight losses. He had 2 victories at 145 via decision over Andre Tucci-Feely and the GOAT Artem Lobov. Prior to those 2 wins at 45, he came in with 3 losses to Darren Elkins, Justin Gaethje, Khabib Nurmagomedov. Before that, a victory over Dustin Poirier, and before that, a loss to Nate Diaz and a loss to Beneil Dariush. So he's fought some of the best of the best. I mean, like I said, he's got wins over, I mean, we'll go through his record right now. I don't mind. He's been around the game for a long time. We'll go to the UFC. We won't touch on anything prior to the UFC, but we'll go to the UFC. He lost in the Ultimate Fighter finale back in December of 2010, Ultimate Fighter 12 to Jonathan Brookins. He's got victories over Tony Ferguson via decision. That was right before Tony really went on his win streak. A decision, knockout victory over Danny Castillo. He's got a decision victory over Joe Lauzon, a KO over Gleison Tibau, decision over Melvin Gallard, decision victory over Edson Barbosa, knockout victory over Dustin Poirier. I mean, just the wins over Poirier, Ferguson, and Barbosa should be enough to tell you that although this guy has been on a rough patch and in his last 10 fights, I mean, here we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In his last 10 fights, he's 3 victories and 7 losses. So he's been on a rough patch in his UFC career. He hasn't been the best. But Michael Johnson, in some of those losses, has shown glimpses of greatness. In the UFC, he's shown glimpses of greatness. The right hook into the left hand that he caught Dustin Poirier with was one of the best shots that, one of the cleanest shots that anybody's ever landed in the UFC. Poirier went to land that uppercut. Michael Johnson countered with a 3-2 and knocked Poirier out cold and then jumped on him for some, I'll say, unnecessary ground and pound, but I guess he was still kind of in the fight, so he jumped on him and got the finish. Then he went right into that fight with Khabib at UFC 205. He hurt Khabib on the feet early in the fight. Rocks him with a right hook, left hand. Rocks him early on the feet, landing the left hand a lot. Right hook, left hand. Boom, boom. Stumbles Khabib. Comes at him, tries to finish him. Almost drops him. You know, it looks like he's on wobbly legs. And then Khabib obviously takes over and does what Khabib does. But Johnson is a little bit different now. Like, later in his career, he seems to be ahead in a lot of the fights and then just mess it up. In the fight against Josh Emmett, winning the whole fight, gets knocked out at the end of the third round. In the fight against Clay Guida, that one was pretty one-sided, you know, a dominant decision over Clay Guida. One of the most dominant losses in Michael Johnson's record, I believe, was that loss to Clay Guida. Like, he just wasn't there. That was his last fight in February of 2021, so he hasn't fought in over a year. The fight against Moises, I mean, he was hurting him on the feet. He was landing heavy. He's got heavy, heavy power, and his speed is unreal. The speed of Michael Johnson adds to the power that he has in his punches, and I think that he just shits the bed. He loses a majority decision to Stevie Ray, and then, like I said, in the fight against Josh Emmett, gets knocked out at 4 minutes and 14 seconds of the third round. So almost wins that fight, is cruising to a decision, boom, against Darren Elkins, drops him multiple times on the feet, gets submitted against Justin Gaethje, rocks him on the feet multiple times, has Justin fallen all over the place, but Justin survives and then obviously comes back to knock out Michael Johnson. I mean, he loses to Nate Diaz. That was a pretty dominant win for Nate Diaz. It was a close fight, but I wouldn't say that Johnson had any big moments against Nate, but, you know, it is what it is. He's fought some of the best of the best. Now, when you look at Alon Patrick, Patrick has kind of, even though he's got a record of 15 and 3, He's a very wild, very reckless fighter, and I feel like you can break him. I think you can break him. You can break Michael Johnson as well, but I think that the recklessness and wildness of Alan Patrick on the feet leaves him open to getting cracked with punches or leaves him open to get out-grappled, outpaced, and I feel like you can take the will out of Alan Patrick. I feel like you could do the same with Johnson, so like either of these guys, if they really get pushed and really get pushed back, I feel like you can drown either of these guys, but I would fade Alan Patrick a little bit more than I would fade Michael Johnson, which is crazy when you look at their records, but I just think that this is kind of a do-or-die situation for Michael Johnson. If you look at Alan Patrick's last few fights, he had a no contest to Mason Jones via accidental eye poke, but in that fight, he was getting dominated. It looks like Mason Jones rocked him on the feet. He took him down. He was in the stat guard looking to finish him off. He got back up to the feet, and obviously there was that eye poke, and the fight ended in a no contest against Bobby Green. Didn't really get much of anything done. Got spun out of position. Got out-grappled by a guy who really isn't a grappler, but he showcased a really good wrestling game. Trips, inside trips, outside trips, takedowns from the body lock, double legs. Bobby Green looked like an outstanding wrestler and an all-American wrestler in his fight against Alan Patrick, where that's not really Bobby Green's style at all. He loses via KO to Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman at UFC 229, Nurmagomedov versus McGregor in the third round. He beat Demir Hadzevich via decision and beat Stevie Ray via decision. Now, Michael Johnson did lose to Stevie Ray, but, you know, I don't count that. I guess you can look at it as, yeah, well, Alan Patrick beat Stevie Ray and Michael Johnson didn't. So, you know, MMA math doesn't always work. Got a decision victory over Damian Brown. He lost via TKO to Mirabek Taisimov. Like I said, KO to Scott Holtzman. Decision to Bobby Green. No contest to Mason Jones. He beat John McDessie via decision, a TKO over Garrett Whitley. And then before the UFC, I mean, there's nothing really notable on his record, anybody he beat prior to the UFC, so we're not going to look too much into that. I think level of competition in this fight definitely goes on the side of Michael Johnson. I think Alan Patrick is good. He throws some wild side kicks, spinning back kicks, you know, spinning back fists when he's out of position, kind of just comes forward and wings wild punches. Now, Michael Johnson is wild as well, but I think he's a little bit more technical with his striking, and I think the speed of Michael Johnson is going to be a big factor against Alan Patrick. I think paired with the recklessness of Patrick, I think that Michael Johnson is going to be there, or Michael Johnson is going to have his target to land the left hook right hand, to land the 1-2, to land the 3-4-5 punch combinations that we've seen and seen the speed that he's become known for throughout his UFC career. I like Michael Johnson here over Alan Patrick. Like I said, I think the recklessness of Patrick and the wildness leaves him open to get cracked with a hook cross, a 3-2, a 1-2 down the middle, a straight left, an overhand left, a right hook. And I think he puts Patrick on wobbly legs, and I think he finally gets a finish. I think Michael Johnson pushes back the clock a little bit and comes in and gets a finish over Alan Patrick. Now, if I was going to sit here and tell you what I bet on this fight, I wouldn't bet on Michael Johnson. Unless you want to run like a Hail Mary parlay and bet on all the fighters you think you are going to win on the card and you want to throw him in there, that's fine. But if you have a parlay that you really think is going to hit like 100%, I don't know if I'd put any chalk or any money on Michael the Menace Johnson. Like, it's just every time you think he's going to win, he shits the bed. He'll be ahead in a lot of fights, and then he'll lose. He'll be ahead, and then he'll lose in a lot of his fights. Michael Johnson is probably one of the most unlucky fighters on the UFC roster, but like I said, also has one of the most unassuming records in the UFC and on the UFC roster and in professional MMA. But I do not think Patrick poses a whole lot of problems, but I would not be mad at you if you wanted to run Alan Patrick as a straight-up bet because, you know, looking at him on the money line against Michael Johnson, he's a plus 125. So it's minus 150 for Johnson, plus 125. I'm not mad if you take a stab at the dog in Patrick, but I got to ride with the veteran, I got to ride with the Menace, and I got to ride with the guy fighting out of Sanford MMA under Henry Hooft and Michael the Menace Johnson, formerly training at the Black Zillions. And I'm going to go with Michael the Menace Johnson to defeat Alan Patrick via a first-round TKO. I think he catches him. I think his speed is a big problem. I think Patrick is going to be wide open for the shots. I think he catches him with that hook cross down the middle, that straight left connects, and he drops him and jumps on him and gets the TKO. So my pick is Michael the Menace Johnson to defeat Alan Nugent Patrick via a first-round TKO. All right, and now we move to the main card with a battle in the UFC women's flyweight division between the number one ranked women's flyweight in Caitlin Blonde fighter Chookagian, who comes into this fight with a record of 17 victories and 4 defeats, going up against the number 9 ranked, I would say prospect, but kind of moving towards contender status, and Amanda Hivas, who comes into this fight with a record of 11 victories and 2 defeats. Now, before we break it down, I feel like you know how Caitlin Chookagian fights. Like a lot of the time you'll see she fights very similar all the time. It's kind of like a broke man's version of a Wonder Boy Thompson in the female division. It's a lot of in and out movement, a lot of, you know, 1-2s stepping off and pivoting, 1-2, you know, guard up, slip off the center line, 1-2 lead high kick, 1-2 lead side kick. Lead side kick to the face. She's very good with the side kick from the lead leg. Very good with lead leg kicks as well. I think that's something you'll have to watch out for against Hivas. But she's a point fighter. I mean, that's what Caitlin Chookagian is. That's who she is. She's one of the best at it, and it's carried her to a lot of success in the UFC. Now, going up against the power puncher and the pile driver, Jessica Andrade, I mean, I think you understand that at a certain point, somebody's going to be able to push through, barrage your style, close the distance, and land on you. And if anybody was going to do that, it was going to be Jessica Andrade, the former strawweight champion, former flyweight championship challenger, and now back at strawweight. You know, I'm not surprised that she got knocked out by Andrade. I don't think that's something that Chookagian can really hang her head on. But you look at her overall record. I mean, she lost to Valentina Shevchenko and lost to Jessica Andrade, both by TKO. I mean, the rest of her losses, she lost to Jessica Ai via split decision back at UFC 231. That's a little questionable, but at that time, Jessica Ai was one of the top-ranked girls in the division, so you can't 100% say that, like, oh, well, Kid Chookagian's not that good of a fighter. She lost a split decision back to Liz Gurwilla-Carmouche at UFC 205, Alvarez versus McGregor. But you look at her wins, she has wins over some of the best girls in the UFC. I mean, she's got a win over Sajara Eubanks, who's kind of been on somewhat of a career resurgence, but not really. She won one and then kind of came back and lost. She's got a win over Irene Aldana. She's got a win over Mara Romero Barella via decision, a win over Alexis Davis via decision, a win over Joanne Calderwood, now known as Joanne Wood, at UFC 238, Cejudo versus Moraes via decision, a win over Jennifer Maya via decision at UFC 244. That lost to Valentina Shevchenko, then a victory via unanimous decision over her sister and Antonina Shevchenko. So you lose to one Shevchenko, you come back and defeat the other. A loss to Jessica Andrade via KO, the shots to the body. She comes back, wins a decision over Cynthia Calvillo, comes back, wins a decision over Vivian Araujo, who also fights on this card, and then comes back and wins a unanimous decision over Jennifer Maya. And the decisions that she wins, most of them aren't close. Unanimous decision, unanimous decision, unanimous decision, unanimous decision, unanimous decision, unanimous decision. Loses a split decision to Jessica Ai. Loses a split decision to Liz Carmouche. Wins a split decision over Irene Aldana, who's one of the top contenders in the UFC women's bantamweight division. You know, she beats Lauren Murphy, who's challenged for the title or was about to challenge for the title. No, she did challenge for the title. She beat her by unanimous decision. So Caitlin Chookagian is one of the best fighters in the women's flyweight division. I mean, her record proves it. Her wins prove it. She lost. She got finished one time in her career, and that was against Jessica Andrade, which a lot of women and a lot of girls in the UFC would get finished by Jessica Andrade. Now, when you look at Amanda Hivas, we'll go back and check Amanda Hivas for this fight. She's a very talented girl. I've been high on Amanda Hivas for a while. I did pick her to lose by knockout to Marina Rodriguez. I don't remember if I predicted that fight on the card on my podcast, but I did pick Amanda Hivas to get knocked out by Marina Rodriguez. She looked good, though, in the first round until Marina caught her, dropped her, and finished her off. But Marina Rodriguez is one of the most decorated strikers in the UFC strawweight division. And I think that a fight with Rose Namajunas and Marina Rodriguez makes a whole lot of sense now, and potentially a fight with Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Marina Rodriguez. Those are two fights I've really wanted to see. But she lost to Marina Rodriguez, you know, big deal. That's not a huge – I mean, it's obviously a big loss, and especially getting TKO'd 54 seconds into the second round at UFC 257. But Marina Rodriguez is a tough girl. She's one of the best in the division. She comes back, wins a unanimous decision over Verna Jandriboa. That was at UFC 267. She gets a first-round armbar submission over Paige VanZant, a unanimous decision over Randa Marcos, a unanimous decision over Mackenzie Dern, which looks very, very solid right now, especially with Mackenzie Dern getting the wins that she's gotten. A rear naked choke submission over Emily Whitmire in the second round at UFC on ESPN 3, Ngannou versus Dos Santos. And then a TKO over Jennifer Gonzalez Aranda. Oh, that's not even in the UFC. So in the UFC, she has gone 6-1. So she's 6-1 overall in the UFC. That one loss coming to Marina Rodriguez. When it comes to her wins, two submission finishes and the rest via decision. So two finishes, four decisions. And then obviously that one loss to Marina Rodriguez, but she came back and got that decision. I think that with this fight, I don't really see Amanda Hivas being able to contend with Chookagian on the feet. I think the constant stance switches, the angles, the pivots, the combinations, you know, mixing up the stance switches with the side kicks, the front kicks, the wheel kicks, you know, the spinning hook kicks, the 1-2 high kicks, 1-2-3 low kick, deep kick, 1-2 high kick behind it. I think the variety of Caitlin Chookagian and her ability to point fight like a poor woman's version of a Wonder Boy, in my opinion, she is the poor woman's version of Wonder Boy in women's MMA. And I just think it's going to be a little bit too much for Hivas. Now, Hivas is a decent striker, but a lot of her best work in the UFC comes via the grappling, comes via the takedowns, comes via the top control and the submissions. Now, I do think she has a chance to take down Caitlin Chookagian, get in the top control, land some ground and pound, potentially lock up a submission like she did on Paige VanZant. I don't think Chookagian wants to go to the ground with Amanda Hivas. If it goes to the ground, I think the odds sway and the probability of Amanda Hivas winning sways heavily if it goes to the ground and it goes into the grappling and the jiu-jitsu aspect of the fight. But I don't really see Hivas being able to close that distance on Chookagian. I think it's going to be another stick and move point fight. 1-2 lead high kick, 1-2 front kick to the body, 1-2 low kick, switch stance, straight left, right hook, teep kick to the body, 1-2 high kick. I think it's going to be a lot of what we've come to know from Caitlin Chookagian. I think we see more of the same here. I think we get a pretty dominant decision with maybe one scare in there where Hivas almost locks up a submission on the floor, but Chookagian gets out and gets back to what she does best, and that's fighting at a distance. So my pick is Caitlin, blonde fighter Chookagian, to defeat Amanda Hivas via a 29-28 unanimous decision. I don't see a finish. I think we get another decision from Chookagian. And like I said, she's going to do what she does. So Caitlin, blonde fighter Chookagian, the number one ranked women's flyweight, to defeat the number nine ranked Amanda Hivas via 29-28 unanimous decision. I'd like to see Hivas win. I'd like to see Hivas crack into that top contender status. I really like Amanda Hivas. I think she's great. I think she can do big things, but I think Chookagian is just too smart for her in this fight. All right, and up next on the main card, we have a battle in the UFC's bantamweight division between Dangerous Davy Grant, who comes into this fight with a record of 13 victories and 6 defeats, going up against UFC veteran and flyweight veteran, now a bantamweight, in The Last Samurai, Luis Smolka, who comes into this fight with a record of 17 victories and 8 defeats. Now, looking at the record overall, you'd say, well, Smolka's got more wins and only 2 more losses, you know, 4 more wins and 2 more losses than Dangerous Davy Grant. But I know Smolka's had some finishes in his career, especially with his body work. He's got good work to the body, good low kicks, decent, you know, martial arts style with the high kicks, the kicks to the body, inside and outside low kicks, you know, decent body work when he gets in close range. The best shots from Smolka on the feet are getting inside and working to the body. He likes that dirty boxing, close off the distance, step out to the outside of your lead foot, work the shot to the body, the left hook to the body. You know, that's his best shots. But he got finished in his last fight by Vince Morales. He was caught in the clinch. He came with an uppercut and then came over the top. As he came over the top, he cracked Smolka. Smolka face planted, turned to his back, and that was the end of the fight. And I just don't think Smolka is that top level guy. And honestly, in my opinion, I never thought he was. Luis Smolka, I respect him. He's a good martial artist. He has some decent wins. He's had some wins in the UFC, but I was never really extremely impressed with Luis Smolka throughout his UFC career. He's been around for a long time, but he just never really impressed me. I mean, let's see. So his last fight, he got knocked out by Vince Morales in the first round. Like I said, that uppercut and then coming over the top as they were tied up in the Thai plum. He lost to Casey Kenney via first round guillotine choke submission. He knocked out Ryan McDonald, you know, a newcomer to the UFC at the time in the first round. He knocked out Jose Alberto Quinones in the second round. So he's got knockout power in his hands. He's gotten finishes. But I think the best work he does on the feet is the shots to the body. He lost via triangle choke submission to Matt Schnell. He beat Sumadarji via submission, beat Kyle Estrada via TKO Dr. Stoppage, beat Tyson Lin. That's back in Destiny MMA and CXF. So in the UFC, I mean, he's got the submission over Sumadarji. He's got the TKO over Ryan McDonald and the TKO over Jose Alberto Quinones. And then losses, KO to Vince Morales, submission to Casey Kenney, and then submission to Matt Danger Schnell. I would say the best win for Luis Smolka in the UFC is definitely that submission victory over Sumadarji. He left the UFC, then he came back, that's when he left the UFC, but he had fought in the UFC before. I knew I wasn't thinking, I was thinking wrong, because I knew that Smolka's been around for a long time. But if you go back to his fights at flyweight in the UFC, he lost via decision to Mateus Nicolau, lost via decision to Tim Elliott, lost via decision to Ray Borg, lost via guillotine choke submission to Brandon Moreno, beat Ben Wynn via TKO in the second round, beat Paddy Houlihan via a second-round submission, beat Neil Siri via decision. Let's see. We're missing one. Neil Siri. Beat Richie Vakalik via KO with the sidekick and then punches to follow it up at UFC Fight Night 55, Rockhold versus Bisping. Lost to Chris Curioso via decision. And then his first fight in the UFC, he beat Elptekin Oskilik via a decision. So, you know, he's got wins over, probably his best wins in the UFC would be over Paddy Houlihan, Ben Wynn, and then Sumadarji. I would say those are his top three wins, but he's a very hot and cold fighter. And like I said, before he left and then came back to the UFC after he went on a little bit of a win streak, he lost four fights in a row. Now, credit, it was to some of the best guys in the division in Nicolau, Elliott, Borg, and Moreno. But they still were losses, and I just think that at this point, you saw him get knocked out by Vince Morales in his last fight. You know, he got hurt, he got dropped. He got dropped hard, he face-planted the overhand right. I don't think the chin is there, and I just don't think the overall game. Now, Luis Smolka, like I said, he's good. He's got decent striking on the feet, good martial arts style, good body work that I think is the best weapon that he uses. But I just don't have faith in Luis Smolka to do much of anything in this fight. And when you look at his opponent in Dangerous Davy Grant, I mean, let's talk about him for a little bit before we make our prediction. We'll go over to Dangerous Davy Grant. He's been hot and cold in his UFC career overall as well. But more recently, I mean, he had a close decision loss to Adrian Yanez in his last fight at UFC Fight Night 198, Vieira versus Tate. He lost that fight actually via split decision to Adrian Yanez. He lost a unanimous decision to Marlon Chito Vera, who just defeated Rob Font in the main event about 2 weeks ago. But he lost that fight via unanimous decision. But in the first round, I mean, they went back and forth. There was a lot of striking exchanges on the feet, a lot of back and forth. There was kind of a war until Marlon Vera just started cutting up Davy Grant with the elbows. And, you know, due to the blood loss and just the overall pressure of Marlon Vera, he was able to take over. But Davy Grant looked good in that fight. He had some very good moments against Vera. He had some good moments against Yanez as well in a very close fight. He knocked out Jonathan Martinez at UFC Fight Night 187, Edwards versus Muhammad back in March of 2021. Before that, he knocked out Martin Day with the exact same punch, the switching left hook to the body, followed up by switching right hook to the body, followed up by a left hook up top. Same combination he knocked out Martinez with. He knocked out Martin Day with. It was obviously, you know, switch the roles. So knocks out Martin Day with that switch right hook to the body, followed up by a left hook to the head, and then knocked out Jonathan Martinez with the same combination. third round for one, second round for another. Beats Grigory Popov, via split decision at UFC Fight Night 163. He lost via submission to Manny Bermudez. He lost via armbar to Damian Stasiak. Before that, he had a decision victory over Marlon Chito Vera, which is why the rematch was made in the first place. He beat Marlon Vera back in February 2016 via decision at UFC Fight Night 84, Silva versus Bisping. Prior to that, he lost via submission to Chris Holdsworth. Before that, that's before the UFC, but his losses in the UFC have come by submission. Lost to Manny Bermudez, triangle choke. Lost to Damian Stasiak, armbar. Lost to Chris Holdsworth, rear naked choke. So you look at this fight, I mean, lost to Marlon Vera, decision, lost to Adrian Yanez, decision, but close fights in both of those and good showing for Davy Grant in both of those fights. Early on in the Vera fight and then throughout in the Yanez fight, which is why it was a split decision. You know, Yanez is a very heavy prospect. Mini Masvidal, Adrian Yanez, is a very, very bright prospect in the UFC's 135-pound division, and he might have some of the best boxing in the UFC and be one of the best boxers in all of the UFC. Marlon Vera just defeated, you know, Rob Font. Looked great in that fight. Dropped him multiple times, hurt him, you know, survived the first two rounds after getting kind of outpaced and outpressured. And then comebacks, drops him, just cuts up Marlon, cuts up Rob Font, and has him looking like a zombie. So, yeah, you lose the decision to Marlon Vera, but look at what Vera just did in his last fight. So I don't really take a lot from those losses. Yeah, he lost to Yanez and Vera, but he looked good in both of those fights. And I think that Luis Smolka's chin, I just don't think is there anymore. I think Davy Grant is a lot more technical on the feet. The stance switches, like I said, switching stances. Sometimes he'll just switch from orthodox to southpaw with his feet. He'll scissor his feet and he'll move, you know, 3-4 times, and then he'll step into orthodox. Then he'll switch, step off with the right hook to the body, the straight left. Good teep kicks from orthodox and southpaw. 1-2, low kick, switch stance, teep kick, straight left, right hook, switch back, left hook, right hand, switch off, right hook to the body, straight left up top, switch off, right hook to the body, left hook up top to the head. I think the striking acumen, the combinations, and the variety on the feet from Dangerous Davy Grant gives a hell of a lot of trouble to Luis Smolka. I know he's known as the Last Samurai, but I think this is his last hurrah, and I just don't see him surviving against a guy who's got as much pace, as much pressure, and as much variety on the feet as a Davy Grant. Maybe he has decent success early on, but I think towards the end of that first round and into the second round, Davy Grant's going to find that chin. And I think he might do it with the exact same combination that he knocked out Martin Day and Jonathan Martinez with. And I'm actually going to go out on a limb and pick that same combination to finish the fight for Davy Grant here. A switch stance, right hook to the body, left hook up top to knock out the Last Samurai, Luis Smolka, in the second round and have Davy Grant come out victorious. So my pick in this fight is Dangerous Davy Grant to defeat the Last Samurai, Luis Smolka, via a second round knockout victory off that switching right hook to the body and left hook up top. Let's talk a little bit about the odds for the last two fights that we broke down with Chookagian and Hivas, and then obviously Grant versus Smolka. So let's pull up the odds really quick. When it comes to the money line, Chookagian is a minus 180 favorite to Amanda Hivas coming back at a plus 155. I think if you look at it from how you think Chookagian fights, if you're going to ride with Chookagian, it's probably best to ride with her to win via a decision. And if you look at the odds for Chookagian by decision, it is plus 110. So it's better than betting a favorite. You're getting plus money for Chookagian to win how she wins all of her fights in the UFC. So Chookagian by decision is probably the best bet. If you want to go the other way and bet on the dog in Amanda Hivas, who comes back at a... Who comes back at plus 155, I would probably say money line is a good bet for Hivas just to win the fight is plus 155. If you want to go Hivas by submission, that comes back at a plus 750. I mean, I don't think that's a bad one. I think Hivas, if she gets this done, it's probably going to be by a submission. I don't necessarily see her winning a decision against the crazy point fighter in Chookagian who's known for point fighting her way to decisions. So that plus 750, if you're going to ride with Hivas, you can ride Moneyline at plus 155. But riding that plus 750 Hivas by submission is not a bad bet. It's not a bad bet. And I could see either of you running that way. And then for Grant versus Smolka, Grant is a big favorite in this fight. He is listed as a minus 310 favorite to a plus 250 underdog for Louis Smolka. I don't mind those odds. Normally, I don't like when people are minus 3, 4, 500, but I think this is warranted, especially after how Smolka lost his last fight. I think the minus 310 for Davy Grant, I wouldn't run, like lay him straight unless you're going to put him in a parlay. Then maybe you could rock with the minus 310. But Davy Grant to win by a finish, which is how he gets a lot of his wins in the UFC, by that knockout, is coming back at a plus 110. So if you're parlaying, I would probably just ride on the money line with Davy Grant at the minus 300 mark, right? Or minus 310. Let's see. Minus 310. If you're betting straight up or you want to just risk it for the biscuit, then Davy Grant to get a win by knockout or TKO is plus 110. So you're getting a lot better odds, but it's always riskier betting on the winning method than it is to bet on the straight up money line. But you get better odds with it, but that's why it's riskier, you know. But let's move on and get to the co-main event of the evening in the UFC's light heavyweight division. You've got a battle between the number 13 ranked Ryan Superman Spann going up against Iwan the Hulk Kutelaba. Both of these fighters, they're on a decent trajectory. Ryan Spann's been a little bit hot and cold lately, been finished in a couple of his last few fights, or in his last couple of fights, I'm sorry. Iwan Kutelaba is on a little bit of a streak right now, I believe. You look at the records, Ryan Superman Spann, ranked 13 in the division, comes into this fight with a record of 19 victories and 7 defeats. Iwan the Hulk Kutelaba comes back with 16 victories, 6 losses, 1 draw, and 1 no contest. So a little bit widespread there for Kutelaba, but overall record, I mean, I think Spann has the better record numerically, but I think, well, we'll get into it when we break down the fight. But you look at each of these men's last few fights. Sorry, I kind of was stuttering there. My bad. But you look at Ryan Spann, and we'll break down his last few fights. He's coming in 19 victories, 7 losses. His last fight, he loses via first-round submission to Anthony Smith, but he got dropped multiple times in the fight. Got hurt with the left hook, got hurt with the right hand, was wobbling all over the octagon, got dropped right before he got submitted. Before that, he beats Misha Cirkunov via TKO in the first round. It's Misha Cirkunov. Usually if Misha Cirkunov's going to lose, he's going to lose by knockout. It's kind of like Alexei Oleinik. Like Alexei Oleinik and Misha Cirkunov remind me a lot of the same style of game plan and the same style of fighter. Sometimes I even get their names confused. That's on me. But Cirkunov and Alexei Oleinik remind me a little bit. They have some similarities, and he knocks him out in the first round, a minute in, via TKO. Before that, he drops Johnny Walker, almost finishes him. Johnny Walker, you know, gets him up against the cage when Spann's going for a takedown attempt, lands vicious hammer fists and elbows, and gets the TKO. Before that, he goes to a split decision at UFC 249, Ferguson versus Gaethje, with Sam Elvey, of all people. Sam Elvey. Now, you look at Sam Elvey's record. We'll pull it up very quickly, because I think this will be interesting to look at. His overall MMA record isn't bad, 33 victories and 17 defeats. But you look at his overall record, the man has not had a win since June 2018. He has lost not one, not two, not three, not four, but 7 fights in a row, and then went to a draw with Dawoon Jung. So I guess you can't say in a row, but he's 0-7-1. In his last 8 fights in the promotion, has not had a victory in 4 years, or almost 4 years. So he goes to split decision with Sam Elvey in a terrible fight at UFC 249. But some people believed Elvey won that fight. And you can't be going to split decision with a guy in Sam Elvey. Now, I know we've heard that Ryan Spann gets in his head a lot. Sometimes he's just in his own head. When he's in the zone, he's dangerous. He's got knockout power, got a beautiful right uppercut, beautiful left uppercut, beautiful right hand. Beautiful punches, heavy power, vicious knockout power, good submissions. You know, if he gets a hold of your neck in that front headlock, I mean, he can take your head home with him. He's a very powerful, strong guy. for the light heavyweight division. When you look back on the side of Iwan Kutelaba, let's see, we'll pull that up very quickly as well. When you look at Iwan Kutelaba, like I said, 16-6-1, you look at his record. He's coming off a win over Devin Clark via decision. Prior to that, a draw over Dustin Jacoby, a split draw. A lot of people believe that he beat Dustin Jacoby in that fight. So, I mean, I guess you can count that as a win, but it was a draw. Before that, he loses to Magomed Ankalaev via KO in a real KO. And then prior to that, loses to Magomed Ankalaev via first round TKO, but he was wobbling, faking that he was hurt, and the ref jumped in and stopped the fight. So that's where the rope-a-dope kind of playing and taunting bit him in the ass a little bit. Khalil Roundtree, he knocks him out in the first round with elbows. Khalil Roundtree just came back in his last fight and looked phenomenal. Before that, he lost to Glover Teixeira in the second round via rear naked choke. But early in the fight, he rocked Glover Teixeira, I believe, with a spinning back fist. Hurt him. Almost had him out of there with the ground and pound. But then Teixeira came back, rallied, and got the submission finish. Before that, a TKO over Gazimurad Antigulov. First round TKO, elbows and punches on the ground. Before that, a knockout over Henrique da Silva 22 seconds into the first round. Prior to that, a decision loss to Jared Cannonier at light heavyweight. Prior to that, a decision victory over Jonathan Wilson. Before that, he lost to Misha Cirkunov via submission. Now, Ryan Spann knocks out Misha Cirkunov in the first round. Misha Cirkunov submits, you know, Iwan Kutelaba with the arm triangle choke. Does MMA math work all the time? It depends on the situation. In this situation, I don't necessarily think it works because they were both at different points in their careers when they had these fights against Cirkunov. And Cirkunov is really not at the best point in his career. But back in 2016, he was on his way up and he was rising through the ranks. So it doesn't look as bad that he lost via submission at the point that he did because Cirkunov was kind of on the rise at that point. So in the UFC, Kutelaba holds a record of 5 victories, 1 draw, and 5 losses. So 5-5-1. Ryan Spann in the UFC holds a record of, we'll count the Tuesday Night Contender Series. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6-2. Losses to Anthony Smith, lost to Johnny Walker. Overall competition level, I mean, he has a knockout victory over Antonio Rogério Nogueira in 2019. That's not super impressive. I'm not surprised he knocked him out. Devin Clark, he submits him with a guillotine choke. That's impressive. You know, Devin Clark has had some good wins. He's a decent fighter. You know, he's had some decent wins in his career. The loss to Sam, or the decision victory to Sam Elvey, but via split decision, that really leaves a sour taste in my mouth. And then, like I said, the knockout over Cirkunov, I think a lot of people expected him to come in there and knock out Cirkunov in the first round. He's got heavy hands, heavy power. He's a very strong guy. If he connects on the chin of Iwan Kutelaba in this fight, I think he could drop him and hurt him and knock him out. It's a rough first round for Iwan Kutelaba. He's going to have to weather the storm because I think Ryan Spann, training out of Fortis MMA under Saif Saud, he's going to come out heavy. He's going to come out guns blazing. I think he's going to come out and try to take the head off of Kutelaba. Kutelaba's been finished before. He has had the tendency to get knocked out. But I think the takedowns, the ground and pound, and just I think Kutelaba is a lot more intelligent of a fighter. I think he can mix it up on the feet. He can use his grappling. He can get takedowns when he needs to. He can control you from the top position, land ground and pound. He can fight somewhat technically on the feet and kind of land his combinations and get out of the way. I think when it comes to the fight, I think the intelligence and the fight IQ of Iwan the Hulk Kutelaba is going to carry him in this fight, and I think it's going to make up for a lot of this fight. I think the mentality of Ryan Spann and his ability to be, or his detriment to be a little bit chinny, you know, when he gets hit with a good shot, he does seem to wobble. I think he did wobble against Sam Elvey as well. That Sam Elvey win, even though it was a win, a split decision, it just really leaves a bad taste in my mouth because we went over Sam Elvey's record and he's just not there, man. He should have been cut from the UFC a long time ago. And I mean, I just think that, honestly, I'm not super impressed with Superman Ryan Spann. Maybe he comes in here, knocks out Kutelaba in the first round, and everybody's talking about Ryan Spann making his way up the ranks. But I'm not confident enough in Spann to ride with him here. I think Iwan Kutelaba's fight IQ, like I said, the takedowns, the grappling ability, controlling up against the cage, getting the backside control, controlling with the wrist lock or the body lock and trying to get on top of him and get the ground and pound, tiring out the much bigger guy in Ryan Spann, or at least the much more muscular guy, in my opinion. I think he's a lot bigger, more muscular. I think he's going to tire him out. I think he's going to make him wilt. And I think I'm going to go with a late TKO. You know what? I'll go with a decision here. I kind of see a finish just because Ryan Spann has had the tendency to get finished at certain points. But I'll go with the decision because I don't want to always pick finishes. And I feel like I've been on the finish kick for a little while. So in this one, I'm going to ride with a decision. I'm going to go with Iwan the Hulk Kutelaba to defeat Ryan Superman Spann via a 29-28 unanimous decision. It's a close first round. It's a scary first round for Kutelaba, but I think that he can weather the storm, you know, land some good strikes on the feet, use that grappling, tire him out, land some power that he's shown to possess. And I think he just tires him out and gets a decision. I want to pick the TKO, the late TKO, but I'm not going to do it here. So Iwan the Hulk Kutelaba to defeat the number 13 ranked light heavyweight Ryan Superman Spann via 29-28. We'll go 29-27 because I think once he takes over, he's really going to take over. 29-27 unanimous decision. All right, and now we move to the main event of the evening in the UFC's light heavyweight division between the number one ranked former light heavyweight champion possessing Polish power in Jan Blachowicz, coming into this fight with a record of 28 victories and 9 defeats, going up against the number three ranked UFC light heavyweight contender and one of the most technical and dangerous light heavyweights on the entire roster and on the entire planet in Alexander Rakic, coming into this fight with a record of 14 victories and 2 defeats. Man, this fight has been booked a few times before. I believe once before, maybe twice. It didn't happen. Blachowicz had suffered an injury and the fight had to get pushed back. And he also had suffered an injury after the Glover Teixeira fight, which I believe this was still longing effects from that injury that he had going into the Glover fight. And, you know, he was just, the fight had to get pushed back, but now we're finally here this weekend. Two of the best light heavyweights in the world go to war in one of the best matches you can make currently in the light heavyweight division. Now, we'll look at the stats before we break everything down, but Blachowicz coming off that loss to Glover Teixeira, and that was at UFC 267. We talked about it earlier, and you know, Blachowicz just didn't look like himself in that fight. He kind of like seemed like he was there. His combinations were decent. His striking was decent. But his movement and his like pop on his punches and everything just really didn't look like he was there 100%. And the minute it went to the ground, like, well, I mean, we figured Teixeira was going to have the jiu-jitsu and the grappling advantage. But once it got to the ground, Blachowicz was just a fish out of water. And you look at the fight against Adesanya where Blachowicz, you know, won that fight pretty convincingly, and most of it was due to his grappling ability, his takedown ability, timing the punches and timing the lean backs of Adesanya with the takedown entries and controlling from the top position and working from the guard, working from the full mount, working from the half guard. Like, he out-grappled Adesanya throughout the entirety of the fight, and he also went toe-to-toe with Adesanya on the feet, even outstriking him at most points. It was a clear-cut decision victory for the champion, or the former champion in Jan Blachowicz. At the time, he was the champion for his first title defense. And I think that was a point where we thought, like, man, Blachowicz just isn't going to lose that title. And then he goes in against Glover where, I mean, we always thought, like, yeah, if Glover's going to win that fight, it's probably going to be by submission with his grappling, his heavy top pressure. Like, yeah, we probably thought that's how it was going to happen. But a lot of people, including myself, pictured that Blachowicz was just going to run right through Teixeira. And that's not what happened. And Blachowicz was just a different person. And he even said himself going into the fight that he just wasn't there mentally or physically. And he just felt awful. And it was the worst performance of his career. And he can't believe it. And he's coming back to put a stamp on this fight and come back with a vengeance and try to reclaim his title. Most likely fighting the winner. Well, if he wins, he would most likely fight the winner of Teixeira versus Prohaska, which takes place next month in Singapore. Now, with the number three ranked Alexander Rakic, he's on a tear in the UFC. He is currently, we'll pull it up, I mean, currently 14-2 as a professional mixed martial artist, But in the UFC, he is currently... one, two, three, four, five, six. 6-1. And the one loss coming to Volkan Oezdemir back at UFC Fight Night 165, Edgar versus the Korean Zombie. It was a split decision. A lot of people believe that Alexander Rakic won that fight. I mean, I don't think anybody really gave that decision to Volkan Oezdemir. So in my opinion, he's undefeated. Like, yes, he lost the decision, but a lot of people, like I said, believe that he beat Oezdemir. So in my opinion, he's 7-0 in the UFC. Like, I believe he hasn't lost yet. Decision victory in a lackluster fight, but still a pretty clear-cut technical, you know, victory in a stand-up battle, technical chess match. I wouldn't even call it a chess match, but Rakic fought very technically against Thiago Santos at UFC 259, Blachowicz versus Adesanya, wins that fight for unanimous decision. Prior to that, a three-round decision victory unanimous over Anthony Lionheart Smith. Hurt him really bad with the right low kicks on the lead left leg of Anthony Smith, just chopping him with the calf kicks, the 1-2s, the uppercuts, you know, the high kicks. And once he hurt him, he rushed forward, you know, switch left kick to the body, another left kick up top to the head, 1-2, shot to the body. He can mix it up when he hurts you, and everything that Rakic throws has sinister intentions behind it. He knocks out Jimmy Manua in one of the most brutal knockouts, one of the most brutal head kick knockouts you'll ever see, a head kick that sent Jimmy Manua into retirement. He threw a right uppercut, switch southpaw to get the outside lead foot on Jimmy Manua, threw the cross, used the cross to blind Jimmy Manua from the trajectory of the left high kick. So switching right uppercut, straight left, directed into the left high kick, smacks Manua on the chin, knocks him out cold, and folds him like an accordion. And yeah, that's one of his best wins, clearly. And then before that, a first round TKO over Devin Clark. The knockout over Jimmy Manua was 42 seconds into the first round. The decision over Francimar Barroso, that was a unanimous decision. Prior to that, a TKO over Sergio Souza at AFC Austrian Fighting Challenge in March of 2017. The last time Alexander Rakic lost a fight, I mean, you can, like I said, you count the Volkan Oezdemir fight because in the record books, it's actually a loss. So if we're counting that, it was December 2019. But if we're counting it actually, it was his first pro fight at RTC Rock the Cage 2 over Christian Radke on October 15th, 2011. So Rakic, in my opinion, Rakic hasn't lost a fight since 2011. So it's been over 10 years since Rakic has lost a fight, in my opinion. If we're counting it realistically and going off the record, then the last time he lost a fight was in 2019, December 2019. So that would be almost 3 years, 2.5 years since he lost his last fight. But he fights about once a year. He fought a lot in 2019. He fought twice in 2019. He fought twice in 2017. And then before that, he fought once in the UFC in 2017. So one fight in the UFC in 2017, two in 2018, two in 2019, one in 2020, and one in 2021. So he's kind of a inactive fighter, but he's still winning. You know, he's still getting huge wins, you know, and he's the most technical and sharp light heavyweight on the roster because John Jones is no longer a light heavyweight, in my opinion. So currently, I believe the most technical light heavyweight on the roster is Alexander Rakic. He can switch stances. He's beautiful. He's got beautiful stance switches off the mixing up of the combinations. Alexander Rakic is a very, very tough fight for the former champion in Jan Blachowicz. But before we get into the prediction, let's talk about the stats. Blachowicz coming off a loss to Rakic, coming off that decision victory over Thiago Santos. Thiago Santos knocked out Jan Blachowicz. Again, you can't play MMA math, but it did happen if you want to look into that a little bit more. Poland versus Austria. Rakic is going to have a 2-inch height advantage. He comes into this fight at 6'4". Blachowicz, the former champion, comes in at 6'2". It's an equal reach, 78-inch reach for Blachowicz to 78-inch reach for Alexander Rakic. Leg reach, 2-inch leg reach advantage for Rakic, coming back with a 46-inch leg reach compared to a 44-inch leg reach for Jan Blachowicz. Win percentages. 26% of the wins coming by way of knockout or TKO for Blachowicz, 29% by submission, and 45% by decision. On the other side with Alexander Rakic, 69% of his wins coming by way of knockout or TKO, 8% by submission, and 23% by decision. Average fight time, 12 minutes and 24 seconds for the former champion Jan Blachowicz to 11 minutes and 25 seconds for Rakic. So pretty neck and neck with average fight time. Knockdowns per 15-minute fight, 0.43 for Jan Blachowicz to 0.75 for Rakic. But as we saw from the win percentage breakdowns, Rakic is much more of a finisher than is Jan Blachowicz. When you look at significant strikes, Jan Blachowicz lands 3.59 significant strikes per minute. Rakic comes back with 4.23 significant strikes landed per minute. Significant strike percentages, Rakic is not only more active, but he's also more accurate on his significant strike percentage. 49% significant strike percentage for Blachowicz to 52% significant strike percentage for Alexander Rakic. Strikes absorbed per minute, Blachowicz takes a little bit more as well. Again, Rakic is a little bit better defensively. 2.79 strikes absorbed per minute for Blachowicz to 2.23 strikes absorbed per minute for Alexander Rakic. Continue. Defense overall, Blachowicz ekes him out just ever so slightly, but it's basically neck and neck. 53% defense rate for Blachowicz to 52% for Alexander Rakic. But I don't really count that final like defense stat as much considering the significant strike defense and everything. I think that has more value when you're breaking down fights. When it comes to the grappling, takedown average per 15-minute fight, Blachowicz actually has more takedowns at 1.14 takedowns per 15-minute fight. Rakic comes back at 0.75 takedowns per 15-minute fight. Takedown accuracy, 53% takedown accuracy on the side of the former champion, 25% takedown accuracy on the side of Alexander Rakic. So not great takedown accuracy for Rakic, but if he gets control on the ground, whether it's from a slip-up, whether it's from a caught kick, whether it's from Blachowicz being out of position, I think he can control from the top and control him. So takedowns would be on the side of Blachowicz, but top control and pressure and ground and pound, in my opinion, is on the side of the number three ranked Alexander Rakic. Takedown defense, this is on the side of Rakic. Outstanding takedown defense at 90%. Blachowicz comes back with a 65% takedown defense rate. Submission average per 15-minute fight, 0.21 for Jan Blachowicz to 0.19 for Alexander Rakic. Again, neck and neck. So breaking it down, I hear a lot of people saying that if it gets to the grappling, that that is where Blachowicz is going to take over. He's going to be able to take down Rakic. He's going to be able to control him from the top. He's going to be able to land ground and pound. He's going to be able to do what he did to Adesanya to Alexander Rakic. And honestly, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think the best chance for Blachowicz to win this fight is to win it on the feet. But honestly, I think this is the toughest matchup for Jan Blachowicz that he could possibly have in the light heavyweight division. I think Jiří is also a tough matchup, but he's not as technical and clean as a Rakic, so it's going to be easier for Blachowicz to set up his power shots and his combinations and showcase that legendary Polish power. I feel like the Austrian assassin and Rakic, Alexander Rakic, is going to be able to kind of dictate the fight wherever the fight takes place. I know that Blachowicz was on a big win streak. He had a career resurgence. He knocks out Luke Rockhold. He knocks out Dominic Reyes. You know, he was on a career resurgence. He knocks out Corey Anderson. You know, I know he was on a career resurgence, but that loss to Glover Teixeira just really doesn't sit well with me. It really doesn't sit well. I feel like Blachowicz is just not the same guy. And I know that it's kind of happened quickly because he just beat Adesanya by decision. He knocked out Dominic Reyes and it was an underdog in that fight. He knocks out Corey Anderson, knocks out Luke Rockhold. So like, oh, he had a change of heart in one fight. He said he wasn't there mentally and he wasn't there physically. And that can happen. It's a game of MMA. It's one of the most physically and mentally taxing things you can do to your body in the world. So I could see a fighter having issues mentally, and usually when they have issues mentally, it affects their performance physically. That's kind of how MMA works. But and I know it's only one fight, and they can come back and look great in the next fight. I know, but I really didn't like that performance from Blachowicz, and I'm not going to use that to dictate how I'm going to predict this entire fight. But we were also talking about the grappling and how people believe that he's going to be able to do what he did to Adesanya and take him down and control from the top. Rakic is a lot stronger, a lot bigger, and there's a lot more danger in terms of getting caught with a KO from Alexander Rakic than there is at from Adesanya. Now, Adesanya did move up in weight. He moved up to 205. He was a smaller guy. He was still tall. He was long for the weight class. He looked big, but there was a big strength disadvantage between Adesanya and Blachowicz. That strength disadvantage is not going to be there for Blachowicz. Blachowicz is not going to have the strength advantage over an Alexander Rakic. He's going to be able to stop those takedowns. And I also think with the fakes and feints and the technical ability of a Rakic, where he switches stances constantly, fakes and feints. I mean, the shots he landed against Anthony Smith, where he threw a right uppercut, a left hook, switched to southpaw, and threw the left high kick. I mean, combinations like that. The combination against Jimmy Manoa, right uppercut, straight left, switching to southpaw, hiding the left high kick, coming up and catching him on the chin. The spinning back fist he landed, you know, in his other knockout victory in his UFC career. I think it was against Devin Clark. You know, it's not, I just feel like, yes, Blachowicz has some very good weapons. The most important weapon for Blachowicz is the left kick to the body off the stance switch with the straight right hand. He's very good at it. We've talked about it multiple times. I talked about it in the UFC 259 breakdown with Jake Manini on this podcast. Obviously, Jake Manini coaches at Hard Knocks Boston, Hard Knocks Muay Thai out in Boston. Shout out to Jake Manini. Love that guy. It's always good talking with him. I hope I can get him on again soon. And I can't wait for Kelvin Kattar and Josh Emmett, obviously. And but hopefully we get Jake back on soon. But going back to what we talked about, you know, I think that Rakic, I kind of lost my train of thought. Give me a second. I think Rakic's technical ability mixed with his power is going to make a lot of the success that Blachowicz has, you know, irrelevant. But like I said, this is what I was talking about. So we'll go back to it. Blachowicz's best combination is the straight right hand switching to southpaw, using the right hand to disguise the stance switch, and then landing the left kick to the body. He landed it in spades against Dominic Reyes, and it effed Dominic Reyes up. It hurt him. You could see on the side of his body, he was just completely destroyed, distraught. I mean, he was landing it constantly. He was switching from orthodox to southpaw with the right hand, and then boom, slamming the left kick to the body. 1-2, switch, boom, left kick to the body. That's his best shot. Blachowicz is good from orthodox. He's I believe a two-time Muay Thai champion or a kickboxing champion, if I can determine that right. Let's see. I will pull this up because I remember talking about it with Jake on the podcast leading up to 259. Jan Blachowicz. And we pull it up. Let's see. Background. KSW. He was a KSW champion. He won a tournament there. There's something about he was in one of the like highest level kickboxing games. The Muay Thai World Championships. He won in 2008, I believe, and 2007. So I think he's a two-time men's Muay Thai World Champion, both in Bangkok and Busan. And he was representing Poland. So he's a two-time Muay Thai World Champion representing Poland. So the guy has good kickboxing. And we talked about it in the fight with Adesanya that left kick to the body off the stance switch from the right hand was going to be a problem. This is going to be a problem for Rakic as well. Rakic had problems with body kicks against Thiago Santos. And the biggest body kick that he was able to land over and over was the left kick, whether it was from orthodox, from the lead leg, or switching southpaw with a combination and then firing off that left body kick. He got hit with it a lot. If Blachowicz lands that early and lands that often, I think he can drop Rakic, hurt him, and jump on him and get a TKO. I think he can maybe drop him just with the body kick and get a finish with a body kick KO. That's one of his best shots. He also switches stances with his punches. He seems to become a lot cleaner with his punches. A very good left hook. I mean, you saw him showcase it against Luke Rockhold. Got a good left high kick, a good left body kick. He's got that Polish power in spades. Really good right hand that he landed on Corey Anderson, I believe, that dropped him and finished him off in a brutal KO. Like, if he lands on the chin of Alexander Rakic, I definitely think that he can put him out. But in my opinion, Blachowicz's only way to win this fight is to knock out Alexander Rakic. I don't think against one of the most technical tactician fighters the most technical and tactical fighters and a pure technician in Alexander Rakic. I don't think Blachowicz can beat him over 25 minutes. I really don't. And like I said, this fight is 25 minutes. You got to win 3 out of the 5 rounds with the technical ability, the fakes and feints. And sometimes people call it a boring style. Yes, it's boring. The fight against Thiago Santos was boring, but he's technical. He's tactical. He uses that long lead hand from Orthodox and measures his distance. He doesn't step in unless he feels like he knows he can land. He very rarely throws shots that he doesn't think is going to land or be used to set up shots that he's trying to land behind his smoke screen of fakes and feints. That against Blachowicz is going to be a problem. I think that Blachowicz is going to have issues with the length and the reach of Rakic. I think the strength and explosiveness of Rakic is going to be a problem. I think he's going to chop those calf kicks early and often. He's one of the best low kickers in MMA, and in my opinion, is definitely the best low kicker in mixed martial or in the light heavyweight division. I think he's going to use that jab, the long lead hand, 1-2 right low kick, fake the jab, right low kick on the lead left leg of Blachowicz. If Blachowicz switches southpaw, boom, he's going to chop the leg. I think there's going to be a lot of low kicks, and I think those low kicks are really going to stifle Blachowicz's ability to blitz in and close the distance, because a lot of Blachowicz's striking success comes off counters and comes off blitzes into range. I think that this could be very similar to the way that Thiago Santos knocked out Jan Blachowicz, where he blitzed into range and got caught up against the cage with, I believe it was a left hand or an overhand. Boom, he just got caught stepping in, boom, dropped and finished. You know, I think we could see a similar knockout because Blachowicz has more power than Santos, in my opinion, and he's also a better counter striker than Thiago Santos. Now, Blachowicz is a much different fighter now than when he fought Thiago Santos. We understand that. But I still think this is just an uphill battle for the former champion. And going off his last performance, I know he said he wasn't there mentally and wasn't there physically, but I think that Blachowicz might be the one to shoot takedowns, but I think Rakic is going to be the one to either stuff the takedowns and spin to take the back and work from the top position up against the cage like he did against Anthony Smith. I think that Blachowicz might be the one to initiate the grappling, but Rakic is going to be the one to control from the top position, to control from the half guard, to control from the backside control that we talked about earlier, the referee's position, tying up the wrist, landing the ground and pound, getting to the top position and controlling. He's very smart, very technical, and very tactical. I think Blachowicz has a shot in the first 2 rounds to land a heavy shot with the left hook. The left kick to the body, switching off that right hand, switching to southpaw, is going to be money. That's what Blachowicz has to be working on. It worked for Thiago Santos against Rakic. He's going to have to start to land that and then use those body shots to work his way up to the head. But honestly, I think this is Rakic's show all day. I think this is the show of Rakic, Alexander Rakic, and I'm going to pick him to defeat the former champion and the number 1 ranked Jan Blachowicz. So my pick is Alexander Rakic to defeat the former light heavyweight champion and the number 1 ranked Jan Blachowicz. And I'm going to go with I feel like decision is the best bet, but based off of how Blachowicz closes the distance, well, no, like, Rakic fights so technical and so tactical, he doesn't mind. I'm going to go with a decision. I'm going to go with a 48-46 unanimous decision victory for Alexander Rakic. Over the former light heavyweight champion in Jan Blachowicz. All right, guys, that's it for my preview predictions and analysis for UFC Fight Night Blachowicz versus Rakic, or UFC on ESPN 36, I believe. Yeah, UFC on ESPN 36, Rakic versus Blachowicz. I hope you enjoyed my predictions and my analysis and my breakdown of the fight. This is going to be a great night of fights coming up this Saturday. I think Rakic is definitely a stellar parlay piece, but I wouldn't pair him with anybody that you're not super confident in. But I like Rakic as a pick. He's not a heavy favorite, but I think betting Rakic money line is a decent bet. Blachowicz by KO is also a decent bet if you believe that he's going to be able to showcase that Polish power. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I hope you enjoyed my predictions. The Touch 'Em Up podcast is available anywhere you get your audio podcasts. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, Breaker, and many, many more. Please leave a review for this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Support my YouTube channel. You can find it at the same name you found this podcast. Look on YouTube at Touch 'Em Up Podcast. Follow me on TikTok at Touch 'Em Up Podcast. I have short breakdowns. I have a breakdown of how Gilbert Burns has issues with the southpaw jab. And I also have a recent breakdown on how Michael Chandler knocked out Tony Ferguson with that front kick and why it worked and how it was set up. Some people definitely don't like that one. I've gotten a lot of the Tony fans in the comments coming after me and on the dislike button. But check me out on YouTube. Check me out on TikTok. Leave a review for the podcast anywhere you can. If you know a fan of mixed martial arts, hardcore fans of MMA, fans of professional wrestling, bring them to Double M and the Touch 'Em Up Podcast. I'm your host, Double M, and I'm out. Have a good night, everybody. All right.